Welcome back to Inquire, the Investor Relations podcast. Our first series is in conversation with senior investor relations professionals in the UK. I'm delighted to be joined by Simon McGough today. Simon has recently started a new role as President of Investor Relations for John Wood Group PLC, the engineering and consultancy company. He's previously held several senior investor relations positions, most recently as Director of Investor Relations for Babcock. Like many of our guests on the podcast, Simon is involved with the Investor Relations Society in the UK and sits on the Best Practice Committee. So as part of our first series of conversations with senior IR professionals in the UK, I'm delighted to be joined by Simon McGough today. So welcome, Simon, and thank you so much for joining the podcast.
Well, thank you. Welcome.
Great. So let's start with your career in investor relations. So tell me about your career journey to date and how you ended up in IR.
Yeah, so I've done about 10 years in IR and came out of audit. So over 10 years ago, chartered accountant and looked at investor relations with a lot of interest. Had a couple of listed audit clients. So had a sort of distant view on what investor relations did. Found it interesting and thought I might end up there one day. And then I was lucky enough that Vodafone, my first IR role, were looking for a newly qualified numerate accountant. And so I applied and haven't really looked back since then, really. So that was my first foray into it as an IR analyst, very much focused on consensus and understanding the numbers, and then added on all the other parts of IR over the next 10 years. And like many people, I guess, kind of get addicted to it.
Just on the ACA point, I've just had my FCA certification come through, which is...
Oh, it's nice.
Yeah, which is nice, but a little bit depressing. I think it's the only sort of qualification you get purely just by being 10 years older than you were when you started. But I mean, is there anything... Because something we're looking at... So we're currently hiring at a sort of associate level and we're looking at sort of newly qualified ACAs. You got any tips for anyone coming out of accounting and going in straight into investor relations?
Yeah, I think... I'd recommend it. So my time in Babcock, we had a couple of roles at the sort of IR analyst level, which were great roles. And a couple of people that did that job have moved on to bigger finance roles. So one went on to be a financial controller in the business, and one's gone on to be a sort of FP&A, a head of FP&A at another company. So it's a great development for people, but also it's really fun. And actually, I went into it wondering, do I know enough to talk to investors about a whole company when I just am quite new on a P&L and cash flow? And actually, although there's a lot to do, having that comfort around even reading the balance sheet, but a P&L, a cash flow, understanding just how numbers are put together is really useful to any IR team and actually is a great grounding. And yes, you have to then get into forecasts and budgets and lots of other stuff, but it's a good grounding. And also, if you've come from that background, you should be able to cope with most of the IR chucks at you.
Yeah, I think definitely when it comes to dealing with busy periods and reporting cycles, I think the biggest change for me moving from accounting into the city and into IR was actually accounting. I was quite niche. I was sort of very sort of involved in the little bit of the P&L I was analysing as an auditor. And actually the best thing for me about investor relations is that visibility you get over the whole business, the whole company, the whole sort of financial statements as well. Yeah. Great. And then you said, so you've been in IR now for almost 10 years. Talk us through your new role. So very recently started as president of IR for Wood. Tell us a little bit about the role and kind of what your plans are for the roles as you sort of build up the IR function there.
Yeah. So just recently moved, so a month ago. So Wood is a really fascinating company in the energy space. So historically oil and gas, but increasingly energy transition and all that means. So whether that's cleaning up oil and gas and decarbonizing that, all the way through to hydrogen and all the different types of hydrogen that people are now learning new buzzwords about, carbon capture, renewables, solar, wind, etc. So really does an awful lot across the whole energy space. And it's a really huge organization. So started up in Scotland, but over time acquired lots of companies, including Alec Foster Wheeler in a big deal about 4 years ago. So it's a really big, interesting company doing lots of exciting things. So that was my kind of big pull to it. And also because it's so involved in energy transition as a leading energy provider, that this whole debate around net zero, how you get there, et cetera, and the whole importance of ESG rather than something that I look at as IR as important and trying to keep up, it's kind of paramount. It's the number one thing on our equity story. So personally, for me, that was really interesting. In terms of what I'm looking to do there, there's lots to do. Like many companies, many UK industrial companies, we feel there's an opportunity to show our valuation more to the market, but obviously the onus is on us. And within a month before I joined, but a month within joining, I was able to do a big announcement where we've agreed that we're going to try and sell a big part of our business. So it's about a fifth of our revenue. It's one of our consulting arms, but market estimates, not ours, are that it will raise quite a lot of money and change our story. So our whole investment case will evolve. And obviously being part of that is really exciting.
Sounds really interesting. Is it just you and the team at Wood?
No. So there are currently three in the team.
Okay.
So myself and a vice president, and then someone in finance that's on a secondment at the moment. And again, learning lots of stuff. So yeah, it's about three of us. And we, like all IR teams, we pull on different parts of the organization. And I've only been here a month, but I'm already learning who I can talk to on finance, strategy, business development, and also being plugged into all the sectors as well. I should say the business units in our organization, but just getting the information. So that's all positive as well.
So quite a new sector for you. I guess any tips in terms of how you're going about getting up to speed and meeting people across the business?
Yeah, so that's it really, meeting people across the business. So naturally in this world, doing it over Teams and Zoom is both a challenge and an opportunity, because I'm based in London in our small Canary Wharf office, but most of Wood is based in Aberdeen. And then there's a big chunk in Houston as well. And in a normal world, maybe go back a few years, probably would have been a challenge for me to be in London and trying to get access to people. Whereas now it's just the cultural norm. So that's one good thing. Secondly, yes, seeing people. So I've met all of our executive leadership team and all of their team that run P&Ls. And the biggest advice I've got for changing industry is just to be honest and open about that. So when I meet the people that run operations in North America, they're experts in energy. I start by saying I know nothing. And it's not quite true. I know a little bit, but it just opens up and lets you have a great conversation where they accept that you get investor relations and finance. And, you know, one of the things I've been saying to lots of people in my intros is I get our numbers, I get our strategy. I've read it. I get our peers, but I don't quite get what we do in detail. And I really want to learn it. And people love talking about their business, right? So you get them to open up and then you just have a really interesting conversation. So that to me has probably been the biggest positive in my first month of doing a role, is just how open everyone's been internally. And also how interesting it actually is when someone's telling you what they actually, them and their teams do. So I'd embrace new industries as long as you've got some interest in it. So there are a few industries, I won't name them, that I probably couldn't personally see myself working in, but mostly I'm open to anything and interested. And I guess it's my third industrial role, although that's very varied, but just seeing how the world works. And again, I come back to energy is central to everything. It touches everything. It's just quite interesting to see. We come in at a different angle to maybe some of my other experiences, but it's just really interesting.
No, it sounds fantastic. And in terms of sort of promoting the role of investor relations, you know, particularly as you're going about these sort of introductory meetings, is there anything you're doing to sort of explain, I guess, the value and importance of IR as a function within the business? Any plans there?
Yeah, so that's interesting. So the good thing at Wood is everyone's open to the importance of investors, people that own us, and the importance of my job in finding new investors. I always say it's my job to find new investors. It's the business job to convince them. So
it's always a good fallback in IR, isn't it?
Exactly.
We just tell the numbers. We never make the numbers.
Exactly. And so there's a real acceptance from the board and leadership team all the way down to the importance of the role. I'm also lucky that I replaced a team that had been doing it well for a few years as well. So I'm not setting it up as fresh. I'm taking it over. And yes, I've got some ideas, but the organization is already geared to understanding what investor relations does and the role of IR. So that's a big positive. I guess the other thing I'm doing as I go around and talking to people is asking them what do they want from us as well. So yes, I'm asking for lots of information, whether that's monthly, whether that's background information, but I'm also offering, yes, there's summaries of research, there's market insights, there's investor views, etc. But even something as simple as sharing an email each Friday, we do it, just summarizing where we are, where the share price is, where our peers are, is useful to them. And actually already you get that, the greatest thing where you share an email on, say, summarizes what our peers have done, and you get that conversation on the back of it. So one of our peers has won a contract doing something that we also do. And then you get a bit of back and forth as to why did they win, not us, and what opportunities we've got. And then that just helps, that helps us as IR plug ourselves in. But I hope also it helps the business just get that perspective as well.
Yeah, fantastic. And who's on the distribution list for the email?
So that is basically all of our, we call it the ELTs, the executive leadership team, the EXCO or whatever you want to call it. And then as time goes on, that grows. So strategy and M&A are on it as well. I've always done that. I've always been in teams that have done that. So back in my Vodafone days, that was a daily. Obviously,
same at ITV, we used to do a daily media update.
Exactly. Now, difference there is we're a big team and still is a super capped company like ITV, where you've just got the resource and everything's happening every day.
And the news flow, exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. I think that the weekly is sufficient. And that's just sort of month one for me. So to have a weekly distribution with some of the senior management, what I want to build out with the team is maybe a monthly wider internal news flow. So again, at Vodafone, going back some time, we did a monthly newsletter to the whole organization. And it just changes the tone a little bit. So it's a bit more high level if you're doing it monthly and rather than daily or weekly. And maybe you wouldn't share all investor feedback or personal views on peer positions and what they're doing. But it just educates the business as to, it's not what the role of IR really is. You know, it sounds obvious that IR's that link between the market and the company, and it's not all one way. So yes, most of our job is taking what the company wants to say and telling the market, but there is that really important bit of telling the company what the market thinks. And that's the bit I've seen grow in every organization I've been in. That's the bit I've seen grow really well.
Excellent. And obviously quite new into the role, just a month in. You know, what are your plans in terms of interaction with the board? And particularly from a governance perspective, do you have some governance roadshow penciled in as part of your corporate calendar?
Yeah. So again, privileged that we have a very engaged board with shareholders. So the board already have met shareholders in the past. They do it as a matter of fact. You know, the chairman writes to top holders each year and does that himself. So kind of walked into a good setup there. So always thinking options of how we do things in the future, things like remuneration policy and access to the chair, etc. In terms of my priorities, though, I think telling the equity story, particularly if we are, it's only a proposed sale, but if we are selling a slice of the business and sort of looking at energy transition more widely, my main focus is on the equity story and the executive team's access to the market and really maximizing that. Not to downplay governance, but I think that I've walked into something that's really strong there. Yeah, I'd say that's good. And in the past, I've done various different things, have done a governance for roadshow, never done a governance day. They always considered it. Again, it's if you've got enough to say and want the access. So I think the main focus, if you're an investor in Wood at the moment, is on future direction of the company, strategy, balance sheet, etc., rather than governance. But that can change, and I guess IR has to adapt.
Just on ESG more broadly, you mentioned it's kind of quite integral to your strategy at Wood. Do you work alongside a sustainability team on communication around ESG matters? And how do you sort of, I guess, develop your understanding of ESG sort of focus areas and risks within the business?
Yeah. So again, this comes back to, because ESG, and particularly the E for an energy company, is so important to our strategy, it kind of does go across the whole organization. So when we talk about net zero, it's actually in our purpose and mission statement. And so everyone from the CEO through to the sustainability team talk about it. So that's a natural advantage we have in IR in terms of telling that story. In terms of the practicalities of it, there is an EXCO or ELT member that owns sustainability. And then there's a sustainability team. So I've met them and very excited. One of those meetings, very exciting, lots of stuff that we both agreed on and in direction of travel. And so again, talking very selfishly as an IR person, I know that our ESG strategy is in good hands. And so our focus as an IR team is telling that story and making sure that investors get it and that it's embedded in our investment case in terms of, are we targeting the right reductions, scopes, matrices, etc. I know that's in good hands. And actually, I can be in that lovely position of learning from the business and trying to sort of maximize how we click with investors. Because I always, you know, being very open, always looked at ESG and found it a tad complicated, as I think everyone would agree. And it comes back to the conversation about I'm an accountant by trade. I get IFRSs because I learned them, or they're IASs when I did it. But I get that language. I get the language of what accountants are trying to do. I get what the world of ESG is trying to do, but there's many people coming at it from different dimensions. And so just having been in an organization where other people get that and I can feed into it is really good.
I think that's a really enviable position for a president of IR. We work with a lot of mid-cap companies where it's simply there's not the capacity across the team to have a dedicated sustainability team. And so the onus is sort of on IR and broader comms to sort of develop that knowledge and specialism. Is there any comparison maybe versus some of your previous roles in terms of the approach to ESG?
Yeah, so clearly at Babcock, which is an aerospace and defence contractor, ESG, I saw ESG move from being something that we considered to something that was really central in the sort of 3.5 years I was there. So in my first 6 months, I think, we appointed the first sustainability director, and she came at it with a passion to be the first one and actually put in so much of the groundwork and setting everything up. As I left, we were in my final set of results. We actually talked about it in depth in the CEO's presentation, because being a defense company, it's a slightly different angle to where we are as an energy company. So different things were important. The S particularly important in terms of employing people in different parts of the UK in particular. In many places, they're the largest employer in the area. So the S of ESG was super important, and the G as well, and lots of governance changes. So ESG was, I mean, it's important to everyone, right? So I don't want to say it's more important because I'm at an energy company. It's just more front and center when your whole strategy is around net zero. And that's probably the biggest difference. And if I went back a couple of jobs to Johnson Matthew, when I was in the chemical space, they overlap some industries with wood, and they overlap a lot of the energy space themselves. Again, ESG was important when I was there quite a few years ago. But actually looking at their investment case now, they've done a really great job of making sustainability the heart of what they do. And they've got various technologies, of whether it's carbon linked or whether it's just about clean air, for example. But they, I think, are a good example of using sustainability, or not using sustainability, highlighting that sustainability is the heart of why you'd invest in them. And that's certainly what we're already talking about at Wood, and something we'll do more of.
You've seen a shift in terms of your, I guess, reactive engagement with investors. So are you having sort of dedicated sections of meetings now with investors, which are more focused on ESG matters, or even meeting with the sort of separate ESG-focused stewardship-type teams within the buy side as well?
Yeah, definitely. It's something that's still anecdotal and subjective, so I haven't got the maths behind it. But just sitting in investor meetings, I just took the last 2 years, it's definitely gone from being on a roadshow of, let's say, 40 meetings. It's gone from coming up as a question twice, let's say, in those 40 meetings, to coming up maybe 20, 30 times. So more than half. And that's in the space of 2 years when you're on the road with management, specifically talking about results. So that's already a sort of biased sample. So it's definitely shot up. And I think my personal experience was we kind of hit critical mass about a year ago. I think different companies are in different spaces depending on their investment case and their sectors. But certainly for years, I've been talking to ESG analysts, but it's moved from that world to the PMs themselves asking about it. And what's really fascinating is because ESG is so wide, right? I mean, some people think of it as just net zero, and that's a small part of E, let alone ESG. And what's really interesting for me is the different focus different PMs have and where their questions are coming from. And I guess it comes from the firm's stance, their stance, what their inflows are looking for and the commitments they've made to their clients. And actually appreciating that is something that that I started to do more than I had, to be honest with you, and actually thinking, okay, so where are they getting their flows from? Their new money is coming from people that are really focused on X, Y, and Z. And that's one of the reasons why net zero is so central to everyone. The other thing we did at Babcock, which was a great idea, it was my boss's idea, it was a great idea, was to specifically reach out on ESG matters, some of our top holders. And actually, some of them said, talk to our ESG team. And we had me and the head of sustainability had some deep dives with some of the big UK institutions, ESG teams, specifically on what their focus points were. So almost like a personalized version of all the letters that we get. But then there was one big US investor who was really happy that we took that kind of direct request to them. And we had an hour with their head of sustainability, but the PM that owned us was on that call as well. And he openly kind of said, well, I want to learn as well. What are our focus points? Because their head of sustainability was the one that talked to their clients around what their commitments are. So that's when I could really sort of see this is something that's finally clicked in our world, right? Where it's gone from something where there's requirements to report and people sort of roll their eyes and say, okay, we need to do another set of indices or another set of questionnaires to, no, okay, this is something that people are basing their investment decisions on. So therefore, the importance of it is now paramount. And people are talking about it in an intelligent way. And I still think there's a way to go. But that, again, was one of my personal justifications for switching into the energy space, is to be part of that debate, because I think there's a lot more debate to be had. So it's gone from something that I've seen as, I need to be better at that, but I don't really get it, to something of, okay, I think I get it, but also I'm really interested in it.
That's really, really interesting. I think that's a great suggestion as well for IR teams to be just more proactive in terms of offering that, to proactively offering that time to talk specifically around ESG matters.
Yeah.
Have you done anything on the targeting side? Because I guess something we're sort of observing is there's quite a few different targeting tools available to try and sort of proactively access ESG sort of dedicated or specialist investors. And it's a service I think some of the brokers are now offering as well as part of their service. Have you done anything on the targeting side?
Not me personally. The team at Wood have, and again, doing a lot of work themselves, but also working with our brokers. But I'd say my experience of that is quite limited, but it is clearly something that's on our list. And again, it comes down to there's targeting of institutions, there's also targeting funds within those institutions. And I'm still learning, I've still got to learn who's good at providing that, who's got the market knowledge on that. Again, it's this evolving world. So I'll actually add that to one of my, that's a very good point. I'll think about that. It's on my list.
Welcome.
But I'll move it from 600 to more near the top.
Right. And just more broadly, I guess, any other trends you've seen in terms of IR over the last, I'd say, well, in your case, 10 years, but certainly over the last sort of 2 to 3 years, what else is changing in terms of how you interact with the market?
Yeah, I think definitely at its core, it's the same job. Right? And it's the same job in every company I've been in, which is one of the reasons why I love it. It's certainly got more profile now. So, and you know, I have to distinguish, is that because I've developed in my career and moved a bit, or is it because the increasingly boards, investors and sell side and banks, but have they always got the role of investor relations? And I think that's probably varied, and that's certainly improved in the sort of 10 years I've looked at it. And you can also see, if you were to take the number of people working in the space now versus 10 years ago, I'm sure it's far higher, but that's a symptom, I think, of two things. One, the demand for access and time and insight. And two, there is inevitably more stuff to do, whether that's regulations, reports, etc. And it's not that big a deal, because I just don't think it's the main part of the job should be talking to the market. Yeah, I'd say it's good to be in an industry that is growing. And the other good thing about it is, although we are technically in competition with each other, we're not really, right? So the ability for knowledge sharing and best practice sharing is really nice in IR. I've never felt in competition with anyone in IR. Even in when I was in UK Defence, we all got together now and again and talked about different ideas, because you're competing for investment in that sector, and we're all competing for investment in UK equities, and then we're all together for investment in equities. So, and then the world's growing. So there's, although you are technically in competition, you're not. And so the ability for people to share best practice has always been really good. And there's lots of great ideas out there. I always say the best ideas I've got, I either saw someone else do or a previous boss did. So it's not rocket science to copy the stuff you think works. But hopefully people do that throughout as well.
I agree, particularly on the peer group. It's super helpful actually to meet with other sort of directors of IR within your space and just share knowledge and ideas. I did a conference last year where they added to the breakout session, because I guess it's been more challenging in the virtual environment to have those kind of coffees and catch-ups and get-togethers with the other IRs in your sectors. But it was a really nice format in this conference where you had little breakout rooms and you could just pick someone who worked within the sort of same sector as you and have a little 30-minute Zoom introduction. And it was actually really interesting. Good. And any sort of innovations that you're quite passionate about from an IR perspective that you're going to look to implement at Wood?
Well, that's a very good question. Because I'd say of all the things in my IR, innovation is probably something I'm under-indexed on, shall we say. My grand vision is actually for what I would call a traditional capital markets day, which is a big room in London, webcast to the world. Now, most of our shareholder base are UK-based. But most of our target audience are UK, Europe, the world, America. So it'll be in the afternoon. It'll be streamed to America. I think over time, I'd love to do more global events. And that doesn't have to be in person. It can be a person. So we've got a big operation in North America. That could be someone in Houston presenting on stage or in the office. And I'd be in London and it would be virtual. And I think opening up a global company to investor access would be really interesting. And it comes back to my point around learning the company. It's been so natural going from Teams meeting to jump literally around the world. So, you know, you've got Australia in the morning and Houston in the afternoon. And I think there's a company in our space, I won't name them, had a very good capital markets day that was filmed all over the world. And I thought that was quite innovative to let it come alive. And they interspersed it with some video content to let the company come alive, and also probably practically as they change the wires and all that kind of stuff. I mean, the other great thing that we did at Capital Markets Day, probably 3 years ago now, again, is it innovative or is it sort of traditional media? But we did a great video of Babcock. I mean, it was really impressive. It was the most impressive thing in the whole Capital Markets Day, and IR had nothing to do with it. But it was showcasing everything that Babcock did in all our spaces, but mainly defense. And it was interspersed of sort of stock footage of submarines breaking through ice, all the way through to interviews with various customers. And it just silenced the room because it was, you know, it was genuinely interesting, but also a little bit moving. And that to me was innovation because, okay, it was a video, but it was something a bit different. We decided to try something different. And yes, there's video content people have all the time of what their company does, but to intersperse it with customer interviews, I thought was really interesting.
I've always been a massive fan of video content in that context, even pre-pandemic. And yeah, I think it's right. We did one for a client about 3 years ago. It was a very relationship-focused business. And so they had interviews with their partners and their clients and kind of put to music. It was almost a little bit moving to kind of hear those testimonials, but it's a really powerful use of content. So is the plan, if you do a sort of global sort of capital markets event, will you still integrate video content through that event? Is that the plan?
No, that would massively be the aim. So Wood did a great capital markets day in late 2019, which was actually the first thing I watched when I knew I had an interview with my boss. And you know, that was a traditional capital markets day. It was a room of people, presentations, but they interspersed it with video. And as someone that was trying to work out what Wood does, the videos were really, really sort of interesting to me because there were pictures and video content of Wood employees doing stuff to assets. And so it really helped it click. And so definitely I'll be reusing those and hopefully using some new ones as well. Because to me, understanding what a company does, you just do more of it. Naturally, you can do more in a video. It comes back to, I've always said the best way of understanding what a company does is a site visit. And a site visit at Vodafone meant chatting to a Vodafone shop on the UK high street about tariffs, because you just learn so much about competition and what customers like, the fact that various models sold really quickly, and some mobile models weren't touched, through to Johnson Matthey, clearly, that was going to factories, Babcock going to see a ship being built, and then in Wood, really desperate to see our operations and maybe some customer sites as well. But the video is a great way of showing the world all of that. But another thing I'm really keen to go back to is site visits with investors and seeing local management, seeing, I guess, the company on the ground doing stuff rather than us on PowerPoint and Excel all day. As important as that is, sometimes you can't be actually seeing the business in its real flesh.
Definitely. Right, just changing subject. You sit on the best practice committee of the Investor Relations Society. Is there anything you can sort of add in terms of your role on the committee or your work with the IR Society in the UK?
Yeah, so again, that's another fascinating thing that I'm able to help out on. It's a great committee. We all do various bits of work. I probably do less work than many on it, to be honest, juggling the day job. But the two main things we look at are the IR Society's best practice guidelines, which are on their website and are very interesting. Again, if you're new to IR, they give you a kind of background to everything in the IR space. And if you're not new to IR, there's some stuff there I'm sure will be new, different angles. It covers everything from consensus management to roadshows to online, digital, etc. And just reviewing that, and I forget which sections I reviewed, but just really makes you test, okay, actually, how has it changed? So we update that regularly. The other big thing the committee does is the awards each year for the IR Society. So what the awards are, the criteria, and then appointing a judging panel. So that's very much removed. But again, just encouraging best practice. So one of my jobs, and I'll say it here, is to encourage people that are members to do the courses, because I think I've done pretty much all of them now in my 10 years, and I've always enjoyed them. And also the qualifications. So someone in my old team was just starting the IR certificate. I did the IR diploma last year, so I recommend all of them. And I guess if you're not a member, consider it. I'm just doing my job as a best practice committee. It comes back to my point about best practice sharing, the fact we're not in competition with each other. There's a lot of IR that people do well that we can copy from each other. There's also a lot of shared challenges, right? Whether that's COVID, ESG, whatever. And if some people have got the answers to that, it just helps us all if we share it. So that's the real purpose of best practice, is just to really help that naturally flow.
Agree completely. All of our entry level associates are all doing the certificate of investor relations. It's fantastic. It's a grounding of knowledge for them. Good. And then just sort of before we wrap up, I guess you've got a team of three. So is there anything you're sort of doing to support their learning and development as they sort of grow their careers in investor relations?
Yeah. So I think, again, I'm 1 month in, so I'll caveat it with that. But I think looking at everything we do, there's certain things, experience is everything, right? So we are looking at selling a big part of the business. That may well be a big transaction. So that's experience that people can get involved in and really enjoy. I think the spread of information in the business, whether that's finance strategy, they're learning from that as well. And I think a new approach of me coming in and asking questions is probably hopefully adding a bit of experience, for example, in how you manage consensus. So I'm looking to change, obviously not how we manage it, I'm looking to change the background of it, the inner workings of it. And that's something. So I guess so far it's more around just someone annoying coming in and asking questions. But as time evolves, it's about opportunities to do different things in the business. For example, the link up with sustainability, I think is really important. And that's something, the link between sustainability and IR is something that we're looking at to really have a proper bridge in place. I think that would be really interesting. So one of the team is in finance, learning what the view of IR does. So it's over in secondment, but he's seeing why you end up understanding why we ask the questions we ask. And then when you go back to finance, you can say, well, IR might be annoying asking for this bridge, but they really need it. Or that KPI, which I know we don't look at here, but it's looked at there. And so just that, I guess the main thing is that experience. But again, it's on my list of thinking, okay, 2022, what else can we do for development, moving around, et cetera?
Great. And just to wrap up, just a couple of really quick questions, just because we're interested in kind of current trends. And in terms of conferences, how many conferences are you sort of planning on attending this year? And has that changed as they've also changed format over the last 12 months?
Yeah, I think so, quite a few. Again, I'm in a company where in an industry that's really in fashion, so to speak, in the investor world. So energy transition. So there's lots of energy conferences that we'll be going to. There's also the traditional sort of CEO, CFO conferences. So ballpark, I imagine, will end up at 6 or 7 this year. And whether that's the CEO, CFO, or whether that's IR only, or whether that's IR plus another manager in the business, definitely going to look at doing some of that. So actually, we might get up to sort of 7 or 8. I think that's probably not too dissimilar to the past. I think Wood's always tried to go to conferences, and there's a lot in our space because of the different industries we cross into. So I personally haven't seen much of a difference. I think the two conferences we've got booked in our calendar for March are both virtual, but I would hope as time goes on, maybe in the summer, there might be a couple of physical ones as well.
Yeah, there were some really good events we used to go to our clients sort of overseas. So missing the travel more because of the networking, and it's actually the knowledge sharing after that you've had a day of meetings with the other IR professionals. I think that's the thing I've missed the most around in-person conferences. And then last question, is part of your sort of strategy, does that involve any retail investor engagements?
So that, again, is on my list of probably.
Yep.
And probably somewhat onwards. So we've got results in March. Obviously, there's a lot of work going on at the moment getting those ready. And then we've got a traditional approach to that access. So, you know, bank-led roadshows, plus some IR-only stuff and 2 conferences. But then the next wave is to think, how do we reach our retail base? And our retail base is small, but not that small. And just how best to engage in it. And so I know there's various people that I have spoken to in the past, and it's on my list of, I'd love to talk, but of all the things I've got on my list, it's probably a post-year-end thing. But again, that's one of the things that I think I probably, in my teams, under-indexed and not being proactive enough in. And that's definitely something that's on our list, probably for the half year onwards, so August onwards. But no, definitely on my to-do.
It's become a lot easier and a lot more sellable, I think, to management teams as well. And now there's sort of multiple sort of virtual different platforms and events you can engage with. It's a lot more time efficient to engage with that audience. Great. Okay. Well, look, Simon, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
It's been really insightful. But I guess before we wrap up, any questions for me or the Equatory team?
Not overly. I mean, I guess anything you're seeing trend-wise, I guess the main thing is ESG, of course, but just other trends, and particularly, you know, being in the UK, about the COVID situation, are people really keen on meeting in person again, or is that going to take a bit of time, do you think?
I think it's a mix across our clients, and it's always down to just management preference. So we've had one client throughout the pandemic who's always pushed to meet in person, and we've had now multiple US roadshows booked and then cancelled. Mm-hmm. So I think it comes down to preference of the management team. Some prefer travelling than others. We've seen less pushback from the buy side. It's much more the management team, I think, driving the sort of in-person interaction. The other interesting trend, so it's great to hear you talk about Capital Markets Days, because it's almost sort of becoming part of the sort of calendar for a lot of companies to do a sort of, whether it's a business unit deep dive every year or some sort of more involved event, which gives access to a broader range of the management team across the business. That seems to be becoming much more so structured. And again, maybe just because it's easier to do that in a virtual format, it's more time efficient for the business. So we're definitely seeing an uptick in terms of capital markets events for companies as well.
And thank you for joining Inquire, the Investor Relations podcast. Please look out for our next episode in conversation with senior investor relations professionals in the UK.